You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Julie Broadway, president of the American Horse Council.
And I'm Emily Stearns, health, welfare, and regulatory affairs liaison for the American Horse Council.
And you are listening to the special monthly American Horse Council episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December 2025. Good morning, Horse World.
It's time to hear from the American Horse Council in this monthly episode of Horses in the Morning.
Whether you are a breeder, a trainer, a tack shop owner, or an equestrian influencer, this episode is your gateway to exploring the art of marketing in the equine industry. From digital branding and social media trends to event sponsorships and niche customer engagement, let's get into how we grow the equine industry, your business, and connect with horse lovers around the globe. It's something we talk about not only with business owners, but here at the Horse Council as well.
And I think when people think marketing, they think specifically about having a product or more broadly kind of a service to sell. But it really applies to all sorts of things across the industry. And here at the Horse Council, we have to get pretty creative because not only do we think about marketing our services and the benefits of joining an association to horse people themselves, but also marketing the horse industry as a whole to kind of the general public.
Oh, and I have to say, Emily, occasionally I get a little concerned when people in the horse industry don't see marketing as everyone's job. And they say things like, oh, that should be what you're doing. That's not my responsibility.
Yeah. And I think, too, as horse people, we are sometimes really good at marketing to each other and not so great at marketing to the general public. And we've kind of developed this really large echo chamber of kind of horse people in the horse world where I'm pretty sure we're just all passing the same $200 back and forth to each other. And without really doing a great job of successfully inviting kind of new faces and new dollars to the table.
Oh, exactly. And for the horse industry in general, the question is always, how do we keep engaging new people in the industry? And part of that answer is to meet them where they are instead of us asking them to come to us. And that's what good marketing is all about.
And I think it's good to keep in mind that everyone has something to market, whether you're teaching lessons, selling britches, running an event. Marketing is necessary for all aspects of the industry. And we were just talking about marketing last week with volunteering and the volunteering episode. And part of successfully building a volunteer base is marketing to them.
Absolutely. We have this great panel today from several different perspectives and aspects of the industry to help us explore when, where, why, how marketing should work and how we should approach it. But first, we want to hear a word from the sponsor of today's episode. So today's episode, listeners, is brought to us from Smart Equine. They are here to help you bring out the best health and performance in every horse. They empower trainers, barn managers, and other industry professionals to help their horses thrive with expertly formulated supplements and thoughtfully designed wellness products. Backed by veterinarians and top trainers alike, they blend science and real-world horsemanship for consistent results that you can count on. Whether your goals are to train for a competition or to support horses you know and love, you can count on Smart Equine to support you every step of the way with a one-of-a-kind solution to meet each and every horse's unique needs. Check out Smart Equine.
All right, everybody. Our guest panel today includes a wide range of people. So we're going to start with having them introduce ourselves. Our first guest is Jen Blanchard of Zoetis. Jen, give us a moment and introduce yourself.
Hi there. Excited to be back on the podcast. My name is Jen Blanchard, used to be Jen Grant, for those of you who I may have crossed paths with. I am the head of marketing for equine at Zoetis. Zoetis is the world's largest fully dedicated animal health company. And you may know and use some of our products like Dormgel or Quest or ProStride on the horses in your lives. I've been with Zoetis for 5 years, but I've been a horse person since I came out of the womb. I'm also a three-day eventer with two geldings, and I am based in beautiful Southern Pines, North Carolina.
Team eventers, unite. All right, Our second guest is Christy Landwehr of NRHA. Welcome, Christy.
Thanks, Emily. Hi, everybody. It's fun to be on the other side of the mic as a guest and not a host of Horses in the Morning. This is fun. And my background, I've been a riding instructor for a really long time. I teach beginners, intermediates, and advanced people on aged geldings that live in my backyard. I am all breed, all discipline to my core. I have worked for the Arabian Horse Association in charge of their sponsors. I used to be the CEO of Certified Horsemanship Association, and now I'm in charge of all the sponsors at the National Reining Horse Association. And I live with my family and animals in Aurora, Colorado.
Thank you, Christy. Always nice to see you. And then our third guest is Mikhail Proctor of USEF. Hello, Mikhail.
Hello, everybody. My name is Mikhail Proctor. I'm the Director of Membership Development and Community Engagement at US Equestrian. So I work in the marketing team, and we are the governing body for horse sports in the US and the national governing body with USOPC, which deals with the Olympic side of the sport.
Mikhail, were you a vaulting rider? Remind me what your connection is.
So I'm an equestrian vaulter. I'm a four-time national champion.
That's amazing.
I coach my own team here in Lexington, Kentucky. Fleur-de-Lis Vaulters is the name. So I wear a lot of different hats, coaching, lunging, vaulting, all the things.
Awesome,
trainer,
awesome.
Et cetera. Okay.
Julie, so, we have to put that in our hat for another episode. We'll come back to that, Mikhail. Don't worry.
No problem.
All right. Our fourth guest with us today is Teresa Woods of US Pony Club. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you. Great to be here. As you said, Emily, my name is Teresa Woods. I'm the executive director here at the United States Pony Clubs. My background, slightly equestrian, but more focused in nonprofit management and youth development. A little bit about the United States Pony Clubs. We're a nonprofit educational organization. We have clubs and hundreds of clubs and centers across the U.S., and we educate through hands-on horsemanship and riding, which allows one to grow through horses. So that also builds leadership, character, community, and just hands-on learning and service.
Awesome. Welcome, awesome. Teresa. Yeah. So that is our group, Julie. It's a wonderful A-list group, if I do have to say so myself.
Yep, indeed. So we're going to get started with a couple of questions. One of the most common questions we get from people that call the American Horse Council is, what are some of the most effective marketing channels for reaching horse owners, breeders, and enthusiasts in this current climate, in this current scenario that we're in? So I'm going to just randomly choose. I'm going to start with Christy. Christy, what would you say are some of the most effective marketing channels?
I think right now, you know, social media is still king, right? Or queen, depending on how you look at it. It's a lot. And we have many variety of members through NRHA, just like from some of the other organizations I worked for. So some like the Facebook better, some like the TikTok better, some like the YouTube better. But if you have beautiful horses, boy, video is key. And you can do so much with video. And the more we can do with video, whether it's on our own websites or within social media, I think that's a great channel to reach many.
Awesome. Mikhail, tell me what your experience has been. Christy's got one audience. You guys at US Equestrian Federation have maybe a little different audience. What are the effective marketing channels you guys see?
Like Christy said, I mean, it's a wide range. You know, social media is out there. We utilize email marketing. Specifically with US Equestrian, we have our own magazine publication that goes out. But other things that you can utilize are some digital and linear broadcasting. We have a partnership with Clip My Horse that powers our USCF network. And more recently, we've been adding new distributions out on ESPN platforms in hopes of reaching new people. So there's a wide range of things that you can do, but it's really just trying to stay, you know, fresh and relevant and making your content as relatable as possible.
Totally agree. Just out of curiosity, so my gal that does our social media at the Horse Council is constantly begging me to let her boost our post. Do you guys do that, Mikhail?
Yes, it's a very those are strategic decisions. It's not just boosting everything. I think it's really looking at what it is that you're trying to promote. And then before we like put a green light on something, we look at the entire promotion plan. And so when it comes from social media, for instance, it's, okay, what is the social media plan as is? And then is there anything within there that we think that we want to put some money behind to make it actually a paid campaign? And so even with that, we sometimes will take it a step further of we try to find, you know, what is the target audience for it? In some of our cases, we've, in hopes of reaching new people, we will kind of plug in what is currently in our bucket to not maybe send this to them. It's really trying to get it out to as many people as possible. So there's many, many different ways that you can play around to get different analytics on whatever the content is that you're producing. But again, those decisions, boosting is fine, but you definitely want to have a strategic plan behind it and really see how it fits in with your entire promotion plan around what you're doing.
Ah, awesome. Teresa, what are your thoughts about effective marketing channels?
I mean, I think it really does vary depending on your target audience. With the Pony Club, our target audience could go from volunteers to youth to adults to leaders within in clubs. So everyone's sort of tuned into a different channel, right? A different medium. So I think in some targets, like with our older adult targets, you know, niche audiences, print and specialized magazines, and we do have a magazine, are still very popular. Events, you know, being present at events. Mm-hmm. Still a great way to market. But also, I think with a big segment of our membership being youth, we can't overlook at all. We need to really accelerate work on social media platforms, because there you get the visual content and the community engagement. And that's so important, especially with Gen Zers.
Awesome. Awesome. For listeners, you can't see us, but she's talking and all of us on this are nodding at one another like, yes, yes. She's singing our song here. Jen, talk to us about marketing channels for you and tell me this phrase I don't understand. Geofencing. How does that come into play?
You're going to give me a doozy here, Julie. Well, geofencing, in my very non-technical unpacking, is essentially using technology to deliver a specific communication within a specific geographic area, which could be as specific as a certain store's parking lot or as broad as a certain city or even state. So essentially, it's that notion of tailoring the right message to the right person at the right time and now at the right place as well.
So when we think about marketing channels, is that a strategy that we should really employ?
You know, I think it depends, right? We live in a world where there are more levers you can pull than ever, and that's really exciting to marketers. But I think it doesn't change the fundamentals of having a really sound communication strategy and understanding who you're trying to reach, what are you trying to communicate, what action do you want them to take? And then I think once you have a really clear sense of that, then you can dig back in the goodie box and say, all right, is it geofencing? All right, is it TikTok? All right, is it print media? Is it events? Is it, you know, any of the various tools that we have? But I think don't put the cart before the proverbial horse and start with the strategy and know what you're trying to do.
Fair enough.
So I might jump in now, Julie, and ask, you know, we talk about leveraging social media and using social media for marketing. So I think my question is, there's so many different kinds of social media out there. We have TikTok and YouTube and Instagram and Facebook and Blue Sky and Twitter and it goes on and on and on. How do you know what audience is on each different type of social media, right? Because like social media is not social media is not social media. So I think my question is, if someone's going to commit to social media marketing, what does that really look like in terms of using this different social media platforms? Are we putting the same posts on each platform? Are we tailoring posts to different platforms? How does that look like? So Mikhail, you're nodding a lot. I'm going to start with you.
That one, that's a really good question. And I think the easiest way to answer it is you need to do your research and really understand how each of these platforms work. So just a common thing that you do see, unfortunately, is people will take a piece of content and they will share it on all of the platforms. And that's not really the best strategy for that, because what they put out there, it could be just some sort of graphic post that might perform better on one platform, and you might want to do something a little bit different on the other. The content can be similar, but it's, again, truly having that understanding of how each of those platforms work
getting an understanding of what are the typical demographics that go through there? What does the algorithm like to do in each of those? So those areas, that research stage is really, really important. So you asked the question, we are blessed to actually have a full team dedicated to just that. They monitor each of these platforms. They are keeping up to date with common trends and music choices and things of that nature. And, you know, the goal that we're trying to do is just to keep everything very fresh, very dynamic. We want to have a wide variety, video from visual across the board. And so, you know, having folks that are dedicated to that does give us a little bit of an edge, and it's very, very helpful. But it's something that everybody can do. It just takes a little bit of time just to do a little bit of research on each of those. And then you can, again, develop as you're doing that whole marketing strategy, really talk through, like, what are the content ideas that you have out there? How are you going to utilize that idea across each platform?
Nice. Teresa, what are your thoughts?
This is what I wish I had my marketing director on the call. You know, I was actually speaking with Sarah earlier today. We were talking about something that we haven't even scratched the surface on, and that is AI aiding us in being able to help us do that research and help us target and help us take messages and tweak them to the right platform for the right audience. You know, as it is now, we're sort of not really in the infancy, but we do push out a lot of the same post on different channels. And that's probably isn't the most effective way to really target and zero and zoom in on a specific segment or a specific person that's getting their information one way versus another way. So I think it's something that we, you know, are really looking towards the future of doing better at, and also segmenting and possibly dipping into AI to help us with that.
That's a really good point that we didn't think to bring up either, that AI, you know, more than just asking ChatGPT what the latest news of the day is, that you can ask it how to direct different platforms and, you know, what age groups are on each platform or different demographics. That's a great thought. Jen, what do you like to add?
Yeah, I think I agree with everything that's been shared. You know, when we're crafting social at Zoetis, we're trying as best as possible to put ourselves in the mind of the person that's engaging with it. You know, we might get really excited about, like, how a certain adjuvant in a vaccine works, or, you know, the response curve of a protein like serum amyloid A. But, like, you know, if someone's sitting on their couch after a long day, you know, maybe with a glass of wine, you know, an educational lecture when they log on to Instagram might not be the best approach. So, you know, I think similar to what Mikhail said, you know, trying to really understand what's working on that medium, why are people engaging with it, what's trending, and then figuring out how you can put your content within that so that it is authentic to your brand, but it's also authentic to the platform. So we've had some fun, you know, tackling some memes, doing some things that are a little bit more fun and engaging, and provide an entry point to then have some of those other conversations that maybe are a little bit more in-depth or educational.
Definitely. Christy, anything you would like to add?
Just that we love surveys, and our members love taking surveys and responding to surveys. They're really into their opinion being heard. So we have asked a lot of survey questions of our members in regards to what do you use the most as far as all the platforms. And that's really given us a lot of leverage and what we should put where. It's helped us a lot.
That awesome. Helps drive engagement too, I imagine, and boost the posts that way as well.
Very yep. much.
So in Washington, D.C., the key to making a good relationship in a congressional office is storytelling. You don't go in and just spout the facts and the figures and logistics of whatever it is you're trying to accomplish. You want it to be relatable. You want it to be personal. And so I'm kind of curious to pick you guys' brains about what role storytelling plays in promoting the equine businesses and the events. And I'm going to do a couple of little funny tidbits to this. I'm going to call on Mikhail first, because everybody now thinks that Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart are like the go-to people for storytelling and relating things that they can get to. So, Mikhail, what's the strategy that U.S. Equestrian Federation uses as it regards to storytelling? How do you find those stories to kind of make it relevant and impactful?
That is, I mean, for U.S. Equestrian, I just have to, that is one of the strengths, is the storytelling piece. And it's, what we found is you've got to, there's two stories that are there. There's a story of the person And then there's also the story of the horse. And so what we're finding more so now than ever is that those horse-centric stories are really increasing in popularity. People really just find a connection with animals in general. I mean, we see that all the time. You'll see the cute little puppies or something like that, and everyone's hearts are just melting. And then you find the same thing that's happening with, you hear just an amazing story about a horse. Doesn't matter what they're doing. They could be in a grassroots, you know, lesson barn all the way up to one that's, you know, winning a national championship to go into the Olympics. I mean, just hearing the story of them as well has been really, really helpful. We've seen a lot of success with that. I think the storytelling piece, you know, you kind of already mentioned it, Julie, it's the relatability. It is, you know, when people are watching or engaging with those types of stories, it's like, I too could experience something like that or something similar to it. And I think that's a really nice way of getting the information out there. And of course, when you have, you know, other celebrities and things that join in on that as well, it just, again, adds a little bit of fun to it. So Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart, we did, you know, there was one for the Olympics with Megan Thee Stallion. When I first heard of that, I thought it was a joke. And then come to find out that was actually really happening. I was like, oh, that's really awesome. So just little things like that. Just recently we had Simone Biles. You guys have seen her starting to take horseback riding lessons. So we ended up sending her some gear so that she could be outfitted while she's taking her lessons and things like that. And so it's just, again, finding those relatable areas. And I think when you really look deep down into it, a lot of these stories and similar feelings are going to overlap. And so it's just best to maximize on that.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'm going to go to Christy next because I have a very specific question. I was in Denver, Colorado this past weekend for a conference, and they did a whole segment on Thunder, who is the horse mascot for the Denver Broncos. And it was a big deal. It was fascinating to see the woman that actually rides out on the field on Thunder. So talk a little bit, Christy, about what you and NRHA do, because you've got some real personalities. I think about, you know, the whole Western movie series kind of thing that's been out there that has really propelled people to want to try reining. And to Mikhail's point, you know, this whole Beyonce factor with the Western wear and all that. How does all that fit into the storytelling part that you guys do?
Well, you just went into a blast from my past. You know, I used to work for the Arabian Horse Association, so I know Ann Judge Wagner really well, who owns Thunder and rides Thunder and will never give up that title. I don't care how old she is. She's going to be riding Thunder when the touchdowns happen. We took that horse into a hotel at the downtown Marriott. We had to put him on a service elevator, and we got to the ballroom and there was checkers on the ground. And he said, oh my God, it's a bunch of holes. I'm not going through that. So we literally had to run a red carpet for Thunder. And then he walked down that red carpet. He went up there. He did his thing. He walked back down the red carpet. It was great. But anyways, kind of a funny aside. So sorry, I had to share. But now going back to my current roots of reining, yes, anything cowboy, Western heritage, cowgirl, any of that is what we embrace. And we're lucky enough to have Taylor Sheridan as a reiner. And of course, he is the producer and the writer of many, many shows. And he also is a big part of The Last Cowboy. And The Last Cowboy is when a lot of our personalities, our big reiners, get on that show. So we also have that to be able to play off of. Reining really is a family sport. You have many in our, like the McCutcheons and the Fapanis and a lot of other families that the whole family reigns. And then some of them also do the English side, like on the McCutcheon side, their daughter actually does the English side. So we just have a lot of families that do a lot of the varying sports. But in the Western world, yeah, the more we can do that's country and Western and really gets back to our roots, that's the storytelling that we like to share.
Lovely. Christy, lovely. I think my question is there an organization in the horse world you have not worked for at this point?
That's why I'm all breed, all discipline to my core. They actually asked me at Reining, they said, are you going to like our mission more than anywhere else? And I said, no. I said, I'm all breed, all discipline to my core. I cannot help myself. I love it.
Oh, that's funny. Jen, talk a minute about what Zoetis's approach is to storytelling, because you have a completely different spin on how you go about this.
Yeah. You know, I think in some ways our jobs as marketers in the equestrian space, whatever segment we're in, we have it pretty easy if we're being real with ourselves, because so often the job of a marketer is to get someone to care about and pay attention and take action on a topic that they probably don't spend that much time thinking about. Like, I don't care how good you are, if you're marketing toothpaste, like, you only have so much of someone's attention. But horses have this absolutely sticky magnetic fascination for the people that are part of their lives, and honestly, even for the general public, which I think we might touch on at some point. But, you know, I think in some ways our job as marketers isn't to make them care. It's to build an authentic relationship with them that helps them understand why your brand, why and where your brand fits in. And so coming from the equine health standpoint, you know, I think the historical approach has been very product oriented. You know, you get into features and benefits and how does the product work? And obviously those are all really important things, but I felt like there was a bit of a missing piece in terms of establishing why Zoetis is committed to the horse and really sharing a little bit about how we as a team are so invested in the industry personally. And so a lot of the work we've done with our Long Live the Horse campaign has been to not just, you know, show how much we know, but show how much we care. And then that in turn helps people understand why you're in the space. It helps make connections to the products, right? You know, if I had a dime for every time someone has come up to me and said, oh, I'd never heard of Zoetis before, but I love Dorm Gel or I love Quest Plus. Maybe I wouldn't be sitting here. Maybe I'd be in Aruba. And so I think, you know, that adage of people don't care how much you know until you know how much they care, I think it's especially true in the horse space. And we all have an advantage leaning into that because horse people care a whole lot.
Awesome. Awesome. Teresa, chime in.
Yeah, as Jen said, the word authentic is so, so very important. And how more authentic can you get than your creators being part of who you are? You know, be it a youth member or a volunteer or a national examiner who's out there in the field doing tests. That's where the authenticity comes from. Or those, if we can get the content and the content from creators who are part of us, that is authentic, and you know it definitely carries weight. But you know, it's all about visual storytelling and anything that resonates. As Mikhail said, a cute pony, cute girl giving her pony a kiss. It's priceless. It's just emotionally, it resonates with people, and that's where I go back to, I guess, TikTok and Instagram, especially with our younger audiences that we're trying to get in. Anywhere we can have a youth-centric story, a channel to tell a youth-centric story, that's engaging youth into our industry.
Awesome. Awesome.
I want to start with Teresa on this next question, because I think as we talk about outreach and kind of growing the industry, you know, I feel like it starts with groups like Pony Club as we try to get kids, you know, I won't say we're a cult, but we want kids into our industry, right? And we don't want them to go away, and we want them to, you know, praise the sun and all that. So Teresa, what would you say, how do we expand the reach of the equine industry kind of beyond traditional audiences? And I was thinking of you guys because, you know, Pony Club works because it's not just pulling in horse kids, you're making horse kids, and you got to find those non-horse kids wherever you can and kind of demonstrate the opportunities to them. So how do you go out and find those kids?
I think it's marketing beyond the saddle, because, you know, sometimes it is beyond the saddle. So we say our mission, our tool, if you will, it's the pony, it's the horse, but our mission is to build good community citizens, to build leaders, to build teamwork, to build competence, independence, someone who's going to actually contribute to the community. Now that speaks to a wide audience. If we can get them to touch the horse, that's going to come. It's not even in their mind. But if you have a parent as an example who, wow, this is a great organization to partner with because I get, you know, my child's going to get these skill sets and it's going to leave a better person, the horse is going to come automatically. Just, you know, touch the pony, they're there. But it's all those other skills that, you know, every hour in a barn, every minute with a horse, it builds responsibility. It builds teamwork, competence, independence. I think maybe if we focused a little bit more on the plus of a human horse connection, besides the riding, the technical aspects, the person that comes out the other end, that may speak to a larger audience.
The American Horse Council has a youth engagement task force. Teresa's a big part of that. Mikhail, a bunch of folks are. And I just want people to realize that we're not being so insulary that we are only thinking about this from our point of view. We have had great conversations with the Go Fishing people. How are you guys getting more youth involved in fishing? We've talked to the Professional Golf Association. You know, they have a whole program for young golfers. How are you guys getting kids to go golfing, learn golf? People often think that the horse industry and the golf industry are very similar because they perceive that it's a very elite, kind of expensive, you know, kind of thing. And so we're fascinated to talk to these other industries who have the same challenges we do of getting youth engaged, just exactly what Teresa's describing. And you have to sort of build off of each other. There's so many choices for these kids today that, you know, finding a way to resonate with them through leadership and development and all these other aspects will be the tool, as Teresa said, to draw them in. Maybe horses wasn't their passion when they started, but who knows, once they get there and they see what it can bring and they learn senses of responsibility and all these other things, it turns into a whole lifetime. So sorry, just 2 cents worth.
No, I was just going to say, and this actually builds on that, because I want to call out Christy in particular next to put you on the spot, because I feel like not just with NRHA, but also with many of the other organizations you've been with, your goal has been to get people invested who might not be traditional horsemen and get people into the industry. So what's your take on that, on kind of how you and not only with NRHA, but outside of NRHA had worked to kind of reach some other folks through marketing?
Yeah, I'll start with NRHA. So we're a sport like basketball, football, baseball, anything else. So we cater to our players, which are the horses and also the human athletes, but we also cater to fans. And fan engagement is huge. Those fans want to come out. They want to go to the Run for a Million in Vegas. They want to go to the American Performance Horsemen in Texas, and they want to sit in the VIP lounge, and they want that experience. And they may never buy a reiner. They may, but they may go buy a horse, and they may go down the trail, and they may go do some other things in our space. And so we really cater to fans. And then going back to my CHA days when I worked for Certified Horsemanship, obviously the more people that ride a horse, and whether it's a reiner, because boy is a sliding stop and a spin fun, or whether it's whatever it is, they're going to get hooked. And as we know, then it becomes a disease with no cure if they really like it. And so the more people we can actually get on the back of a horse is probably even more important than watching. So having a very good infrastructure, like Teresa mentioned, with the United States Pony Clubs, with what Certified Horsemanship Association has, just gateways for involvement, even your average ranch that has a dude ranch component where you can ride a horse, or you can go down the trail at our state park here in Colorado, or whatever the case may be. You just have to have avenues for people to touch them and to get on them. I really believe in that.
Hard agree. Julie, I think you're with me right there in that it's all about getting those experiences too, right? Yeah. Like once you get someone into that first experience, whatever it is, whether it's as a participant or an enthusiast with that fan experience, we have them at that point. It's just getting them into the door in whatever kind of way they're looking to be active. Julie, anything else you wanted to add? All right. So Mikhail, anything you wanted to add about that?
I think, you know, agreeing with what everybody has already said, but again, our industry, you know, we just have to strive to make it more relatable. And just like you all mentioned, it has to be touchable. Like people have to be able to experience the joy of horses. That's just what they do. And so with US Equestrian, you know, that's been kind of over the past couple of years, we've really been pushing a lot more of our grassroots efforts. I think, especially looking at us being, you know, the governing body, we're a national governing body with USOPC. So a lot of people think that we're just the elitists and just dealing with the Olympians, but we have a number of international and national breeds and disciplines that are also under our belt as well. So we actually started like a new kids club program that really is centered around education. So it's, you know, right now, if you have people that are members and they have a kid that is interested in horses, they may not be a rider. They don't have to be. They can still access all of those educational materials. And then we also have a community outreach program. So there's 40 organizations nationwide that are providing all sorts of equine services, whether it's they're doing inner city work, they're dealing with at-risk youth, they're dealing with veterans, they're dealing with therapeutic riding, occupational therapy. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. These are just other ways that horses are impacting lives. And so in doing that, knowing that we are still having to deal with the Olympics and things like that, is how do we bring all of those groups together? So just recently we visited an organization in Maryland that just won the USCF Heart Horse Award. So what this is it's recognizing one of those horses that are part of those community outreach programs, and they're going to be honored at our annual Horse of the Year awards. So now you have this horse that is going to be honored on the same stage as the national champions. They're going to be honored on the same stage as the international champions, and the breeders, the owners, everyone is all together, but these horses are just as important doing their job. So we're honoring them as well. So it's just bringing everybody to the table. And I think that just gives a little bit, it kind of humanizes us a bit that we do care. We are horse people. We can be a little quirky at times, but we do have hearts and we do care. And you put a horse in there and that's where you're going to get the minds to really meet. And that's what we're just really trying to leverage on, so that these on-ramps going into horse sport or just horses in general are a little bit easier. Right now, it's this like huge step just to get onto the horse. We want to have a nicer on-ramp where more people can have and share in the amazing experiences that horses can give.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, Jen, any last thoughts to share? Because Zoetis is in kind of unique point in this conversation because you're selling items, you know, for people who own horses. So what do you guys consider, you know, an expanded audience in this term part of the conversation?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, we've talked a little bit about some of the barriers to folks maybe who have a passion for horses actually taking that next step, obviously cost, access. I think there's also an intimidation factor, certainly when it comes to equine health. I mean, gosh, I've been riding and owning horses my whole life and I still phone a friend, you know, my vet, my trainer, a barn mate, you know, like, oh gosh, do I have the right weight blanket on? Like, oh, does he look lame? Like, no, he doesn't look lame. He looks just fine. But, you know, I think that coming in, maybe, you know, as a new horse owner, we know we saw a lot of folks get into horses over COVID that maybe weren't as veteran of horsemen and women. I think making information really accessible, kind of breaking it down, demystifying it a little bit. And that's both, you know, directly with the horse owner, but also working with the veterinarian who's so crucial to those conversations to help them have those conversations. You know, they have an absolute wealth of technical and medical knowledge, but when I talk to some of our veterinary customers, you know, they're like, help us break it down, like help us market to our clients so that they can really understand why, you know, ProStride might be a great solution for their horse if they're experiencing osteoarthritis. And so I think a lot of what we do is focusing on high standards of care, but also demystifying that through our veterinarians and making sure that equine care can be accessible and isn't a barrier to engaging with these amazing animals.
Yeah, I have to say, Jen, I've heard repeatedly in my career in the horse industry, sometimes we are our own worst enemy. A new student comes to a barn, they want to take lessons, and the first thing that the trainer says, well, you're going to need this helmet, you're going to need these boots, you're going to need these chaps, you're going to need this, that. And the next thing you know, mom and dad have been adding up the numbers in their head, and they're like, whoa, wait a minute now. So I totally agree with what you guys are saying. There's got to be this on-ramp, and we have to make it a little more bite-sized and a little easier and not feel so intimidating. It really can feel a little overwhelming. It's like,
I think that comes down to kind of straightforward communication too, right? Like whatever messaging you're putting out, don't feel like we have to use really intense horsey terms or really intense medical terms. Like simplify it, you know, make it as easy as possible for folks to understand.
Yeah, I bump into people. I travel a lot, folks, on business, and I'm on the elevator and somebody turns to me and says, what do you do for a living? And I start talking about what I do for a living and they immediately glaze over because I've already started the whole terminology vernacular thing that just totally blows their mind. I'm like, what are you talking about? Anyway, so in our last few minutes, guys, I'm going to try and consolidate. We have several questions left, but we just don't have time to get to all of them. So
I'm going to ask two. What is one of the strategies you think that works best for building a loyal community around the industry, a product, a brand, an event? And how can the industry shift public perception about horse ownership and care? Because that's where Jen was just going with that. So I'm going to start with her. Jen, what are your thoughts about those two things?
Gosh, you really saved up the good ones.
It was for the land. Yeah.
Brain teaser here. I mean, I think the first one, you know, I really believe successful brands in any space, and certainly in the equine space, lead with their purpose. They lead with their why. You know, if you understand what you're trying to do as a business and why you are engaged in the equine space, and you can build that into your story. And I don't just mean marketing stories. I mean, everything is a brand touch point these days. So that's your, you know, your employees, your sales professionals, where you show up in the industry at events, what's the experience like on your website. It's all those different touch points. But I think if you can kind of connect the dots around why you're there and why you care, that helps, you know, that helps folks understand where you're coming from and hopefully see a bit of themselves in the brand, something that they can relate to. And I think ultimately that's where the magic of customer loyalty comes from.
Awesome. Mikhail, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I think the big thing right off the bat is, we've mentioned it before, but authenticity is huge. You know, I think it's just really important if you're looking at a community, people need to be able to somehow see themselves doing this. And so I think that's really important. I think the other side of it is, again, going through the education pieces of it, but it's the transparency as well, and not being afraid to say like how things are. Like with horses, they do bring us joy, you know, to our lives and everything. But there are some things that we need to pay attention to, from just, you know, monitoring health, monitoring their weight, make sure they have enough to eat, this, that, and the other. But there's ways to make it really fun. And so me outside of USCF, me coaching vaulting, that's one thing that I really try to do with the kids, is get them as involved with the horse as possible. So they're understanding, not just from a grooming perspective, but it's like, why are we doing the grooming? Well, yes, we want to have them clean, but we're also checking for things, making sure that they look fine, this, that, and the other. You know, they can get involved in the feeding of the horses. So when we go to shows, it's like, okay, well, we don't have turnout here, so we've got to make sure they've got hay, they've got water. We've got to take them out for walk breaks. Like, why do we do that? Well, I don't think a horse was designed to sit in a box all day long. How would you like to sit in a box all day long and do nothing? So it's just little things like that, and making it to where it's not, they almost feel a sense of ownership themselves without owning the horse. So parents love that talk, that they can get all the horse stuff without actually having to own the horse right then and there. And so just getting more people involved in the day-to-day of just equine in general, and people, again, us that are in the circle, being willing to share that. You know, I know that if my kids are going to go muck a stall, it's probably not going to be the way that I did it, but I'm going to at least teach them that way. And so hopefully it'll be good enough. So it's just giving them the opportunity to get those experiences for themselves. And then they too can find the joy that we so passionately have. And then their passion then continues to grow from there. But it's not us, you know, putting everything up behind red tape. It's, we've got to give them the opportunity to touch and feel and really experience this deep passion that we have for horses.
So I have to digress 1 second, and then I'm going to go to Teresa. So when you use that word authenticity, what popped into my head was, a while back, there was a video, and it was on social media, of this adorable little Western girl. She's all tricked out in her Western wear, and she has tied her pony to the side of the trailer because she can't get on the pony by herself. And she's climbing up the ladder on the side of the trailer so she can get on top of the pony. And I am freaking out from a safety point of perspective. That video went viral because she was so cute, and she had so much ingenuity in figuring out how to get on that pony. And she was so authentic. It was so sweet. And yet I was sitting there like hyperventilating, like, oh my gosh. But The authenticity really resonated with people who were not part of the horse community, didn't know any different. They just thought it was cute and adorable and just really ingenious of her to figure out how she was going to get on that pony without having any other assistance in any other way. Teresa, what's your thoughts on this subject?
So that was your perception. You went to safety first. And that's right. That was your, you know, and we're talking about, you know, the public's perception in general. I think the second half of your question was horse health. I think we could all do a better job, and we are really educating the non-horse public around horse well-being and show that through our actions, we love our horses and we're striving to do everything right to care for them, both emotionally and mentally. We just started a new hashtag with our campaign, Happy Healthy Horse. And I think that's what we all need to champion, is a happy, healthy horse.
I love that. I love that. Christy, you want to round us out?
Certainly. So as far as a loyal community, you know, these events are huge, right? And whether somebody's going to go watch a horse race at a racetrack or they're going to go to a rodeo and participate or whatever, having them be, and I cannot help myself, it's my CHA day, safe, effective, and fun events. I'm also going to include the safe, is really important, because even though this fun stuff goes on social media or whatever, we need to educate the masses about safety around horses and that they're not a dog, because most people assume that a horse is a dog because they know dogs, right? They don't know horses. And they're very far from a dog. They act very different, all the things. So education, I think, is key on this whole concept of, you know, letting others know about what animal welfare is and horse welfare and how we're taking care of them. And education is key. And the more we can all provide content, whether it's video content or whether it's written content or podcasts like this, I think that that's really important. Education is key for the masses to understand our sport.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, folks, we really want to thank you for joining us today. It's been a great conversation. Just a reminder for everyone, marketing really, really matters. And it's not just for products intended for horse people, but we need to market the horse industry too. So jump on board. The American Horse Council has a marketing alliance, and our program is called Here for Horses. So you'll hear me repeatedly say hashtag Here for Horses. And we mean that sincerely in all forms and in all ways. And we really partner strongly with a lot of other groups in the industry. Michaela and them are getting ready for the Olympics in 2028 in LA. They're going to have a big campaign for that. Zoetis has got a campaign. Teresa just talked about a campaign. The Pony Club's kicked off. NRHA has a campaign. Remind me, Christy, what's the new tagline for raining? This here is raining. What is it?
You're very close. Well, this right here is raining.
Yep. This right here is raining. There you go. So lots of different ways to promote what's going on in the industry. And we encourage you to sort of lean in and help us with that. So thanks, folks. We really appreciate your time. And listeners, if you want to have a second bite at this apple, reach out to us and tell us that you want to hear some more about this topic. And we'll do a follow-up podcast on it. So thanks, folks. So our legislative and regulatory update for this episode is brought to you by Poplas. Poplas is a world-class equestrian facilities, race course, exhibition buildings, and entertainment venues. The team at Poplas uses world-renowned expertise to create some of the most recognizable, immersive equine and entertainment experiences around the globe. From Churchill Downs to the new Belmont Park, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo to the Calgary Stampede, they specialize in planning, design, and development of the world's foremost equestrian and livestock venues. Learn more by visiting poplas.com. And if you haven't seen the new arena in Oklahoma City, woohoo! Poplas did a fantastic job with that. So check it all out, folks.
So today for our legislative and regulatory update, we're going to cover a topic coming out of the IRS. And while we know taxes isn't always the sexiest sell, we think this is a great example of how regulatory rules from all agencies can positively or negatively impact the horse world.
One of our goals for our legislative and regulatory updates is to always better help you understand how the horse world fits into the larger economic ecosystem, and also help folks understand how regulatory items outside of the obvious, like health and welfare topics, and Horse Protection Act or the National Disease Response or screwworm, those outside of those things we all typically think of, these other issues have the potential to impact our daily lives as horse people.
Totally. And I'm also going to take a second while we talk about this to stump for the tax handbook that's coming out if people are thinking about taxes. So I'll mention that again at the end. But government affairs and civics isn't always the most exciting topics. And I know in high school, it definitely wasn't nearly as exciting as like when my chemistry teacher was lighting things on fire in the classroom. And it's really hard to wake up in the morning and go, I love intricate governmental bureaucracy. But here we are, and we're going to do our best to get you all on our level.
So with that, our topic today is occupations that customarily and regularly receive tips. Now, Emily, please help me understand why we should care about this and why this caught your attention when it hit the Federal Registry.
Gladly. Let's start with the tax implications first. Earlier this year, Congress passed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, and this bill has several updated tax exemptions that are active for 2025 and 2028. And one key exemption in the bill is no tax on tips.
So as it goes, from now until 2028, employees and self-employed people may deduct qualified tips received in occupations that are listed by the IRS as customarily and regularly receiving tips on or before December 2024 going forward. And the language that is key here is, quote, qualified tips are voluntary cash or charge tips received from customers or through tip sharing.
And just based on the fact that you're struggling with getting through all this, I would just like to note, like, I totally understand if everybody out there in the real world is also struggling with this. So that's why we're here, to kind of help you work through it. And it's important to note, you can only deduct the first $25,000 of tips. And this only applies to people making less than $150,000 a year. And your occupation must be on the IRS list of, and I quote, occupations that customarily and regularly received tips. Now, what caught our eye is that horse-drawn carriage drivers are on the list, which is great because they definitely receive tips after a ride and deserve that tax break.
So then what's the real problem here, Emily?
Well, the problem is that pet caretakers, which include groomers and exercisers or dog walkers, as an example, and pet sitters was also on that list. But legally, horses are considered livestock, not pets. And there's a very clear legal distinction. So this meant that even though many of our horse industry entrepreneurs out there who provide many of the same services and more that typically receive tips, especially if you include farriers and masseuses and braiders, they would not qualify for the tax exemption.
Okay. So, and if you recall, I believe you said the word animal caretakers was also there, which would include exotic animals at zoos, which were explicitly listed as occupations that don't qualify for this tax exemption.
Exactly. You got it. And so, again, the issue with this is that horses are not legally animals per the definition. They are livestock. So this goes all the way down to kind of that ugly bureaucratic definition. We have pets, animals, and livestock, and horses are legally livestock. We'll do another episode on why that's important. But for now, just trust us that it is.
So how do we get horse industry service providers included if we indeed want them to be included? Because I'm willing to bet that there are some people out there working in our space that are getting cash tips that they don't necessarily want to reveal that they're getting tipped.
Totally fair. And we're not here to tell people how to do their taxes. We're going to go forward with the don't ask, don't tell kind of situation for this. But there definitely are people out there who do report their tips and want to be included in this. And so we submitted comments during the public comment period back in October, requesting that the phrase pet caretakers be changed to pet and livestock caretakers. And this would then include all pet and livestock, including horses, cattle, and sheep, service providers, and that would include groomers, farm sitters, hoof trimmers, braiders, farriers, and more that receive tips. And all that changes from just adding that one word livestock. And it'll be a couple months before we find out if they make the change, but we felt it was worth our time to make the ask.
Excellent. So here's hoping this goes forward and our equine service providers can get some good tax breaks.
Yes. And this is also your friendly reminder that your amazing farrier or braider or farm sitter probably deserves a nice big fat tip for the upcoming holidays.
Indeed. We're getting close to the holiday season and it's a good time to thank all those people that do those wonderful things for you. That's all for this week, folks. But if you have a regulatory or legislative question, don't be afraid to reach out to us. We can be found at info@horsecouncil.org.
And tax handbook season. So don't be afraid to reach out to us for the tax handbook, Julie, if you want to mention that a little more about that.
Thank you for joining us today. We'll provide more information and links in our show notes. We invite you to support our beloved industry and join the American Horse Council. We've got some great membership drive stuff going on, folks. Or you can earn a free subscription to our monthly newsletter, which shares the latest in all of our legislative happenings, both federal and state, as well as more information that horse owners like you might need to know, especially about New World Screwworm.
And you can follow the American Horse Council on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly Twitter, and LinkedIn. And you can also subscribe to this podcast RSS feed. You can subscribe to Horses in the Morning on any podcast player and find all the shows, including ours, on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
And Emily mentioned this earlier, but we have a new tax handbook coming out because of the big, beautiful bill. So lots of new things to know about what and how taxes might affect you as a horse owner. So check that out. Should be out right after maybe the first of the year. So we're working on it right now. So thank you again for joining us. We so appreciate you listening. And as always, we like to say, #HereForHorses.